I'm thrilled to say that this series of Beyond the Bathroom is sponsored by Skin & Me, the subscription skincare service tailored to provide what your skin needs. Make sure to keep listening for a discount code you won't want to miss. That's for later in the episode. Now on with the show. Hi, I'm Sally Hughes and this is Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I chat to my guests about their relationships with their own appearance. In Beyond the Bathroom, I attempt to get under the skin of my guests' beauty routines and rituals and hope to find out exactly what they see when they look in the mirror. How has their past affected the way they see themselves now? When did they look and feel their best? And how has their relationship with face and body shifted as life has ebbed and flowed? I've interviewed this week's guest on many, many occasions. And it seems that each time she has undergone, if not a reinvention, then a revolution. Bobbi Brown began her beauty and business career as a makeup artist. A small collection of nude lipsticks became Bobbi Brown Essentials, became Bobbi Brown the mega beauty brand powered by Estee Lauder companies, became, well, just plain Bobbi deciding to walk clean away from her billion-dollar creation in her 50s. She retrained as a nutritionist, designed and opened a hotel, founded a supplement brand, but most notably, created Jones Road, an independent makeup brand that saw its now 60-something founder reborn as a clean girl beauty trendsetter and TikTok sensation. As Bobbi slays her third act, I want to know where this obsession with making others beautiful came from. Where she got her self-confidence surrounded by supermodels in an industry that celebrated tall white blondes, and how she maintained it during a difficult business divorce and a then uncertain future. Let's find out. I talked to Bobbi on Zoom. Bobbi, welcome.
Wow, you are so fantastic at what you do. I'm in awe of you, Sally.
Oh,
seriously. And you know, honestly, like people that listen to you, they love you, but I just have to tell everyone what a wonderful, adorable human being you are and how you've been so supportive of me along the way, both on and off, you know, the camera. So I just want to say thank you.
Oh, you're lovely to say that. And you know, I've loved seeing this part of your life the most. I've loved you the most in this part of your life, and I don't think you'll mind me saying that, and we'll talk about that later. But it's been a joy to see this latest reinvention, because to me, it just feels like the one that is the most authentically you. So let's talk about the authentic you and where that all began. Can you remember the first time, or the first time in your life you became aware of how you, Bobbi Brown, looked?
It's a very interesting observation that I have of myself growing up, because I never felt I was pretty. I never felt that I was smart. I never felt that I was tall enough or an athlete. I just never felt enough. And I had these very young, gorgeous parents that wanted me to be gorgeous, and I just wasn't. So they would do anything to, you know, how can we help? My mother put me on diets. She offered me a nose job, which I declined. You know, my father, you know, had his own comments, and, you know, I don't blame them. I blame myself, but I think it has really helped me become who I am. And that's my entire life's work, to help people feel good about who they are, not trying to be who they're not.
Yes, there's a direct line there, isn't there, between what you ended up doing and what you experienced then. There's something so heartbreaking to me, though, about hearing you say, my parents wanted me to be gorgeous, and I don't blame them, I blame myself. I mean, I would argue that it's neither their fault nor your fault. It's the world we live in, right? But that is a very hard thing to feel as a little girl, that your parents want you to be prettier than you are. Were you able to develop any self-confidence at that point, or did that come later in your life?
I think it definitely came later. And the most amazing thing, that my parents are still alive. I'm very close to them, and I've had the conversations.
Sure.
And, you know, of course, the way I describe it isn't the way they remember it. So,
sure.
You know, that always happens. And now raising my own kids, I understand that when they tell me what it was like having me as a mom, I'm like, all right, guys, let me tell you what it was like. But you know, my mom just really was the most glamorous, amazing woman, but she never felt so herself. So she wanted me to be something that I wasn't. And you know, I've come to peace with it. But honestly, I realized that when I moved to New York City and became a makeup artist, working like bathing suit fashion shows with girls with one name, Linda, Cindy, Christy, Naomi. And I'll never forget, I was 8 months pregnant doing a fashion show. I think it was Liza Bruce fashion show. And I looked up at these girls that we had just made over their bodies. I was 30, 31. So they were 20. And I remember looking at them and feeling bad about like who I was. And then I just said, stop it. If you're going to compare yourself to them, you're mm-hmm. going to lose. And by the way, just how lucky am I that I am pregnant and married and happy? So I realized then, you know, it's like, look, you could admire, but you certainly can't be who you're not.
I want to come back to your marriage because I know it's such a huge, huge part of who you are as a person and a huge part of your confidence and your success. And I will definitely come back to that. But as a makeup artist, you had such a strong vision and sense of aesthetic regarding what was beautiful to you. It was what you were saying before. It's, you know, it's you only better. It's you at your most beautiful, not when you're trying to look like somebody else. When do you think that set in? When do you think you decided that that was the key to beauty, to look like yourself?
Well, when I was starting out as a makeup artist, it was the 80s, and the whole trends were contouring, overlining lips, changing the color of the skin. Like, honestly, I tried to conform. I was terrible. I wasn't good at it. And I slowly started putting blush on that looked like your cheeks, only better. I started doing lips that look like your lips. And I don't know why, naivete, I just thought they looked so much better. I started doing makeup that way. And then different kind of photographers started hiring me. So I started going in a different direction. And all of a sudden, I was the makeup artist when you wanted models to look, quote unquote, natural. You know, it wasn't a thought out thing, but it's what I just organically gravitated to. And by the way, I have learned anytime that I could be myself is when I am the best at it and most comfortable.
I mean, that's true in life, right? There is no way you can ever, ever, ever be as good as somebody else at being like them. And no. Nobody will ever be better than you at being yourself.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. Although, speaking of role models and being inspired by others, we've talked about this before, but I saw you posted this week about Ali McGraw. Mm. Can you talk about what she meant in terms of how you viewed your own appearance?
Well, when I was in middle school, I must have been in seventh grade, where, you know, I wanted to look like, I think, who was the big model at the time? It was Cheryl Teagues. And I remember I bought a health book. My dad got it for me and she was on the cover. I followed it to a T. I still didn't look like Cheryl Teagues. And I, you know, that's when I was really struggling, like most middle school girls do. Do I look like the cool girl Lynn? Who am I? And then I went to see Love Story. And honestly, I don't remember that much about the movie, except she looked like she wasn't wearing makeup. And she had dark hair parted in the middle, had very strong eyebrows. And, you know, I fell in love. And I realized, you know what? I could be pretty too. I had strong eyebrows. I had straight, dark, shiny hair, and I didn't wear foundation. So she was my role model. And true story, on my 50th birthday, I was at home and the phone rang and it was Ali McGraw. And I was like, excuse me? And she said that she saw me on the Today Show because I had taped a piece about my turning 50. And she said, I've been a fan. I've been wearing your products for years. And we kind of started a small friendship. It was pretty amazing.
A characteristic of Ali McGraw's face that I really associate with her is that sort of deep set eye. And you have a deep set eye. And I remember when, I don't remember if it was your first book or your second book, but a long time ago, I think your first book. And there was a whole section on how to make deep set eyes look great. And what struck me about it, although it was a long time ago, I think I was already in the beauty industry, I think, is that it didn't say how to change, improve, enlarge, look spacier. It didn't give you tricks on changing the appearance of deep set eyes. It said something like how to make deep set eyes look great. And I just wanted to know, has that always been your philosophy about features?
You know, 100%. I've never been someone that tried to use makeup to change. Like I didn't ever use makeup to try to change someone's nose. And I certainly didn't use makeup to change someone's eye. I mean, I find Asian women so incredibly beautiful. And there were so many makeup companies that were trying to show them how to make their eyes look more Caucasian. And I just, that didn't make sense to me. So I've never changed the color of someone's skin. You know, when I'm doing makeup, I have certainly lightened dark circles and gotten rid of spots. But I just believe that when you look like yourself, whatever it is, it's the most beautiful you that there is.
It's funny for a makeup person, because I know for a fact that your real passion is skin from the outside and from the inside. Tell me how you have looked after your own, how you look after your own skin now, and how that's changed, if it has, in recent years.
Well, it's funny. I've had people say to me in the past year or so that they've never seen me look better. Like, they just don't understand.
I agree.
And I get these comments and calls, and I have not done any shooting of anything in my face. I don't do Botox. I don't do filler. I don't do any of that stuff. But I do laser, but I'm 65 years old, and I'm happy to say it because people are always, you know, embarrassed to say how old they are. And I find it like such an amazing positive thing about me that I am this age, because I know so much and I've experienced so much, and yet there's so much more I want to do. But I'm probably the healthiest I've been. My eating is at a really good place. I don't have to stop and start anything. I do what I call intuitive eating. It's like, it's honestly basic, simple philosophy. It's not complicated, and it works for me. I exercise a lot, and that helps too.
Tell me what intuitive eating means to you and what that looks like in practical terms.
Well, I was the person that said, okay, I have to go on a cleanse. So I tried this crazy juice cleanse or this crazy something. And that, you know, I'd lost and then I gained back because I went back to eating my normal food, which maybe needed tweaking, but I didn't realize it. So then I would say, all right, I'm going to do that paleo thing, or I'm going to do the vegan thing. Everyone's vegan and looks so good. None of that worked for me. Okay. I tried food allergy tests. That didn't work. What worked when I did go back to school and get my degree, I learned a lot about intuitive eating. And that just means, just because someone tells you you shouldn't eat something doesn't mean you shouldn't eat it. So, you know, I know that when I eat a lot of cheese, I don't feel great. I know when I eat a little cheese, I feel fine. I know that I can have a vodka or a tequila on the rocks, feel perfect the next day. But when I have two, I'm not going to feel great. When I have three, I'm going to feel awful. So I started changing and paying attention to what works. I can eat a lot of bread and pasta, but I could eat a little bit when it's, you know, worth it to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't overeat anything. I don't do extreme things. And I try to eat the best quality of foods possible.
How do you keep a track of that? I'm just thinking in practical terms how somebody listening might want to adopt a similar approach. Do you write things down in the beginning until it becomes second nature in terms of the cues your body is giving you?
I don't. I don't write things down because I try and then I'm kind of all over the place. Sometimes I'll use notes or I'll write it on paper. So I just pay attention. Like, okay, why does my stomach hurt so bad? I think it could be that. Or why do I look so bad? It's because I'm really tired. Why am I tired? I went out too much. I did have a dessert last night with my drink, which for me, I know doesn't work. And I did not drink enough water. Okay, instead of like, I'm going to just starve myself, I go back to what's the healthiest meal I could eat for breakfast, make sure I have extra water, make sure I walk, and then eventually it kind of catches up to you. So it's kind of the same thing with your looks and how you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. It's moderation, but it's paying attention to what works. Like, and that's a hard, look, I'm in my mid-60s, so I wasn't this, you know, of like evolved or whatever in my 50s or 40s. It's taken me a while.
And what does that, I suspect you're going to say it does affect you positively. What does that kind of eating and exercise do for your mental health, not just your physical health? What impact does it have?
I'm someone that believes in the whole circle, that if you are not eating properly, you're not going to be in your best mood. You're not going to have your best clarity. You're going to be more judgy and aggravated of people, which I easily could fall into if I'm not feeling great. So for me, if you feel good, you know what? If you feel good, it's kind of everything. And if you don't look good, you know, I know the five things I could do to look better. I can get a blowout. I could certainly use makeup to make me look better. I can, get a massage on occasion. I don't do that enough. But I know the things. I can get a manicure, I can get a pedicure. Those are the things that make me feel better.
When you're living a corporate life, it's so funny because when I first met you, you lived a corporate life, wildly, wildly successful, global brand, at the helm of it still, very much still at the helm of it, several years before you decided to walk away. How was Bobbi different in her skin then to now?
Oh my God, I was so different. Honestly, I was so different. Number one, I felt for a long time that I was always trying to please people that were not easily pleased, put it that way. And it was a lot of hard work and it was a lot of aggravation, which leads to stress. And, you know, there was a lot of cooks in every kitchen. So you don't realize that this treadmill you're on, you have to keep going to, you know, to feed the beast. And that with, you know, having too many voices telling you what to do or what not to do or what's not working or whatever. It did not make me a truly authentic, happy person. And honestly, if it wasn't for my Aunt Alice, who was 89 at the time, she's now 91, that said, I've listened to you complain for a long time. It's just time for you to do something else.
Wow.
You know, that was pretty much the catalyst.
Wow. Good old Aunt Alice. That's so cool. She's just like, I'm done with listening to this. This has to end.
Exactly. Yeah. Enough. Yes. Because I was always like, Aunt Alice, I'm going to fix this. This is what I'm going to do. Because I'm a fixer. If there's a problem, I will fix it.
Me too.
Yeah. And there's a time. And to everyone listening, like, you don't realize that you're not as happy. You don't realize you're not your authentic self. You don't realize your potential while you're still in the middle of something, and you do, it's not like you walk away and all of a sudden everything's glorious. There's things, and, you know, feeling bad and dealing with emotion is part of every process. And I've luckily never been divorced to, you know, my husband. So yes, you're right. It was a work divorce, which, you know, comes with a lot of angst, but I am so grateful because I have never been happier.
Yeah. And honestly, you, like, it oozes off you. It's really, really, really obvious. Aww. But I'm glad that you mentioned that nothing comes without that period at the end where you have to take a moment. And there were a few things I wanted to ask you about that. You left a brand that literally had your name on it. You were a big deal, not just in that brand, in that industry. And there is a kind of, there is a queenliness that kind of goes with that. And when you walk out of it, albeit absolutely of your own accord and for positive reasons, you must have felt, if not a crisis in your self-identity, but concerns about your self-identity. Like, who are you if not corporate Bobbi Brown at the helm of your own brand? You know, did you ever think, am I still going to be relevant? Who am I if not this person? I've done this for so long. Tell me what your thought process was when you go back to Jersey. You're with your dogs, you're with your husband and thinking, I mean, what the fuck am I going to do next?
Well, the funny thing is that when it happened, it wasn't an expected thing. It just happened.
Yeah.
Whether it was mutual, wasn't mutual, it happened. And when I left and went down in the elevator, it was the most bizarre feeling. All of a sudden, all of my problems that I felt that I was frustrated about left because I wasn't responsible to fix the lighting in the store and to fix the messaging and all the gone. So that was like an amazing feeling. But then I immediately started to worry. I'm like, oh no, my driver is not going to have an income. And the kids that come to my house for Halloween are not going to have a lip gloss anymore. Like, those literally were my first two thoughts. And then, you know, then there's a state of shock. And I had to call my husband, and he came in, and, you know, we had a glass of wine and talked about life and things. And I went home, and my friends were there with tequila. You know, I think two nights we drank tequila just talking. And then honestly, I was like, oh shit. Like, I'm so used to having a full plate. There was all of a sudden like nothing. And, you know, I thought I would lay around. I thought I'd go on a vacation. No, I called a few people. And at the time, I wasn't at liberty to talk about it because, it, you know, when you're part of a corporation, it took a couple months to get the message out, which, so that was the hardest part.
I saw you 3 weeks before. I saw you 3 weeks before it happened. Yeah. It was so sudden.
Yeah, it was very sudden. And then the announcement came right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. Had to live by myself. And, you know, I had to deal with things. So I am someone that whatever is going on, you know, I have people I could talk to. I don't have a shrink. But a friend of mine called me and said, can I come and talk to you? And he's a life coach. And I'm like, what is a life coach? He was really helpful. He was fabulous. And then I reached out to a couple other industry people. And the first call I got was from Marcia Kilgore that said, I know what you're going through. I know you're going to come back to beauty. I'll introduce you to all my labs. I'll be there for you. I mean, I'll never forget her for this. It was quite... And we could both relate to what we were going through. And then I called a friend of mine who owned Saks and Lord & Taylor and said, oh, I'm glad to have you. And this is, you know, let's do this Bobby, just Bobby. And then I just kept going, Sally. I did a hotel with my husband. I did a wellness brand. I did a podcast. You know, I'm a serial, like, why not person. Mm. It took me 4.5 years since the day I left the brand to launch Jones Road. And I launched Jones Road on the end date of my 25-year non-compete.
Wow. It's so funny, isn't it? When big things happen where maybe your status changes or things are uncomfortable for people, it's when you find out who are your actual supporters, right?
100%.
And for those listening who don't know who Bobby's talking about, she's talking about our mutual friend, Marcia Kilgore, the founder of Beauty Pie, Bliss Labs, like a million things. She's like a serial entrepreneur. And the fact that somebody in your world who could potentially at some point be your competition would pick up the phone and say, babe, let's go. I need to help you make whatever you want to make happen, is quite something. Who else has been important in making you believe in yourself? I know your marriage has been really important in your life.
Well, my husband was really the one that, you know, encouraged me to do this. He knew I wanted to do something, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't necessarily know how. So he built me an office. He encouraged me to hire, you know, a couple people. I started with interns, and then, you know, eventually I added to the team, and I just experimented because I didn't go out to create a clean brand, but I wanted to see what you could make, what formulas you could make without putting all the, you know, the non-cool things in. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be and I'm not a spokesperson for clean versus traditional, but Jones Road is a purely clean line because it's honestly, it's what girls want. And it was, you know, how I treat my insides. I eat the best food I can eat. You know, I don't always eat organic food because I eat out. But when I can, I do the best. And so I wanted Jones Road to be clean. But even more than that, the reason I wanted to launch Jones Road was because I thought I had something else to teach people. Because when I left the last brand, you know, there was a lot of makeup to on the face, and it wasn't me. It was just what was happening. And I don't like a lot of makeup, but I want people to look their best without looking like you're wearing makeup. So there is a Jones Road look.
There absolutely is a Jones Road look. And I wanted to talk about that because I know for a fact, the Jones Road look is absolutely your style, your taste. I think, you know, whether people use the brand, don't use the brand, I'm here to tell you it is absolutely your brand, like all the way through. It is so your cup of tea, as we would say here. But I wondered whether also there was something to prove there in that you had been at a brand where one could argue that your very, very clear and defined aesthetic had drifted away from you. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that was important to you to come back to that look.
Well, I didn't know right away that I was going to go back into the beauty space, but I missed it like very quickly. And I started doing makeup and I filmed a masterclass. And then I realized, especially during masterclass, I wasn't doing the same makeup anymore. I was teaching people different, and I was that I had something to teach, which is how you can use makeup and not look made up. Like way different than what I did previously. So I did have something else to teach.
How so? How were you doing makeup differently?
Well, I think a lot of it were the formulas were different. So I might have had in my fingertips how to use the formulas and not look chalky, heavy, layered on. But it was really difficult for most of my artists to really see what I saw. So when I started Jones Road, like a lot of our bases are clear. So when you put the color on, it doesn't look chalky. Like I realized that a lot of traditional makeup bases they start out chalky. It's like when you're trying to take a sunscreen that's all white and tint it, it still looks chalky. So a lot of our formulas I discovered work so much better when they're clear. Our pencils, which are skin color, it's a clear base, so you don't see it, the chalkiness on the face. So same thing with the foundation, and it's a different kind of look.
Skin and Me, our brilliant sponsor here on Beyond the Bathroom, is a subscription skincare service tailored to provide exactly what your skin needs. Each month, you'll receive a personalized dermatologist-designed solution packed with wonderful active ingredients you can't buy over the counter, delivered in a metered dispenser called the Daily Doser. I can vouch personally for both the service and the doser because I myself have been a paying Skin and Me subscriber for almost 2 years, and I wouldn't be without it. It takes around 12 weeks to reveal your best skin. Whether your goal is to banish breakouts, soften fine lines, ditch the foundation, or you want a great-looking base for makeup, see what you can achieve when you introduce actives into your nightly routine. Beyond the Bathroom listeners can trial their first month of Skin and Me for just £3.50. Just use the code Sally Hughes. That's SalliHughes.
We ask all our guests, what is your Skin and Me moment? When do you feel like you're so happy in your skin?
Honestly, when I do less, when I kind of don't overcommit myself, because I'm pretty overcommitted. I have that habit. If I have free time, I'll book a lunch or I'll book something. But if I start to do less, I like the way I look better. But recently I had a facial by someone named Beauty Sandwich. Mm-hmm. And he does all the celebrities and all the, you know, the Met Gala. And he gifted me his incredible talent, and I still look good. You know, I love it. And, you know, it's very expensive. It's not for the average person, but it was such, you know, a gift for me.
Is he one of those people who puts his hands in your mouth and is like working the whole like muscles and everything?
No, he doesn't do that. He's got this little laser machine that kind of helps lift everything. And he says it helps build the collagen. And I am the first one when someone offers me to go, you know, try some laser and write about it on justbobby.com. And I did one of three treatments of Morpheus 8, which I think is really good. Have you done it? It's really painful.
I haven't, but I'm asked about it so much. People are so interested in it.
Yeah. So I have two more to go. And it's so painful. I'm nervous to go back, but I am going back because he swears that it's just, you know, the one life-changing thing that you'll continue to do, because it just tightens your jaw. And, you know, that's what happens when you get older. Your neck, your jaw.
You feel bad about your neck, is Nora F. saying.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she didn't live long enough to get all these lasers.
But she still looked fabulous.
She did.
She still looked so chic and elegant and beautiful anyway. What's so funny, I think, about Jones Road and the huge success, it's certainly one of the most asked about brands to me. I am asked about it constantly. What's funny about it is that almost accidentally, although you obviously have a good business instinct, but almost accidentally, since it's always been your aesthetic, it's kind of come round to your way of thinking, right? I remember talking to you a few years ago, and you were so frustrated because everyone was doing contouring and you didn't want to make that. And they were doing these kind of big full-on Instagram faces, and you didn't want to do it, which I imagine was one of the frustrations of helming a corporate global brand, that it wasn't your vibe, it wasn't your style. And now the style is absolutely your vibe again. Why do you think that is? Why do you think women have flipped?
Well, I think so many things have changed. I think that if you think about it, I mean, I can go out to a party with my hair in a ponytail or a messy bun. I couldn't have done that 10 years ago. I can go to a party, you know, in a more casual outfit with a nice pair of earrings. I couldn't have done that years ago. There was always those like tall, pointy shoes that you had to be fabulous and carry the big handbag. And a lot of it has to do with times that are changing, the younger generation that came in and just said, we don't want to be like that. And then, you know, the pandemic and everybody being working from home and realizing that all the things that you thought mattered before don't matter. And the things that matter still matter. And so I've kind of always been that way, Sally. I mean, you know, I've been a working mom my whole life, and I've always put my family before my work.
You're an independent now. How important is it to you to not budge when you know something is right? Or are you more compromising now?
You know, I know a lot. I have a lot of experience, but I also have people around me that don't have that experience, but bring in other things. So our chief marketing officer happens to be my 30-year-old son, Cody, who is brilliant at what he does. You know, he's watched me all these years, so he understands the value that I have, my experience, my knowledge, my network, my platform. He understands that. And his wife is our head of social, so she understands, you know, that also. So I'm lucky that way. And so we're able to kind of take the new things with the older things. And that's when it's successful. You can't just be the new things and you can't just be the old things. It's honestly the combination.
When do you feel like you look good? When do you stand there and go, yeah, I look good?
Well, first of all, the hashtag of Jones Road, I don't know if you know this, is how not to look like shit.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, because that's why I wear makeup, you know, the days where I don't look so good. But, you know, I think I look really good when I get my hair colored. I just, you know, it's amazing. I do it every 2 weeks because I am 100% white. And when I walk in there, I've got makeup in my part and, you know, my hair grows really fast. When I walk out of there, oh my God, I could float. That's when I try to shoot most of my TikToks, by the way. I'm like, Kyle, get me. No, honestly, if you want to book when I feel my best, I leave the salon. I go there at 10. I leave at 12. Give me lunch. And 12:30, we'll shoot for an hour. Like, that's the best. I feel good. You know, I look good after I've exercised. My hair's messy. I've got pink in my cheek. I'm very happy with what I see. And, you know, sometimes I've lost a bit of weight this year, so I feel more comfortable in my clothes. And so, you know, I will look at I have the best full-length mirror, by the way. It's on an angle. So what that does is make you look taller. I know it's not exactly accurate, but I like looking at myself before I walk out of the door because then I just stand taller. So it works for me.
You're a small woman. I'm a small woman.
But I'm shorter than you are.
You're shorter than me, and not many people are, although my guest on a previous show, we were talking yesterday, she's your height. So we were talking about this. How do you feel about being a short woman? Because I don't mind it at all, but I know people have tricky relationships with their height.
Yeah, I don't mind being a short person, but I wish I had longer legs. Like I'm 5 foot tall. Even someone that's 5'2 or 5'3, I just like the way pants look a little better. So, but I've figured out how to, you know, wear narrow pants, not skin tight where I'm wearing tights, but narrow pants that make, you know, my legs look slim and that looks a little taller. I wear platforms because it feels like flats, but, you know, it just raises me a little bit. And, you know, I've learned like what clothes look better on me. You know, my blazers that are fitted, you know, and not too tight, or I don't look good in oversized things. I do not look good in flower dresses, especially with all the fabric. I do better with like lean clothes.
Yeah. When you look back on your looks, whether beauty or fashion, style, whatever, when do you think you don't look good?
Well, I certainly don't look good when I look back and I see pictures that so aren't me. So when I was in my early 40s, I did try Botox And I just hated it. I looked like I had, you know, like an evil eyebrow, and it just looked so unauthentic. I hated that period. And then I also, you know, hired a couple stylists once or twice in my life that tried to help me, but they didn't try to help me, guys. They tried to change me. And
yeah,
it did not work. It did not work. And so, you know, I don't look at those so much. And honestly, if I just do the Bobby wardrobe simple thing, I don't care. I'm comfortable. I feel good. And, you know, I even figured out what to wear for both of my kids' weddings.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, I didn't want to look like someone's mother.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that at the time. You looked incredible. And a beautiful moment to do your new daughter-in-law's makeup, I feel.
Yeah, both of them. Both of them.
Yeah.
And by the way, beautiful moment, but so stressful. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I know. Making sure they like every little thing. Yes, it was. You know, I'm glad I did it. And, you know, they couldn't tell me they didn't want me, but it was a little stressful. But all in all, I think they look gorgeous.
Yeah, they did look absolutely beautiful. I finally just want to ask you, you are 65. You must be surprised that you've become a thing on TikTok. Nobody's expecting that at 65.
No one is expecting that at all. And, you know, what is expected is that I would try things. You know, I'm not afraid to try things and they don't work. So it was a recommendation from someone in media that I really respect. And we did it. I was mostly blown away by the comments from women that said, oh my God, I'm in my 50s. I'm in my 60s. Yeah. I'm in my 40s. How do I do this? I don't feel good. What do I do about this? You know, and literally, you know, I spent a lot of time answering and then I just couldn't even handle it. Like my CX team.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. My CX team has to answer, and then it's gone viral. And then, you know, fortunately or unfortunately for the business, it literally quadrupled our sales immediately.
Yeah,
and then we were out of stock for a couple months. Now we're in stock and I think our sales are only doubled. So it's managed.
And if they're saying that to you, do you feel good at 65? Do you feel great?
I feel great. There's some moments I don't feel as good. You know, I might be a little tighter in my body than I like, but then what I can either complain about it or I could take a hot bath and stretch. So I will take a hot bath and stretch. I think there's an answer for everything that's wrong. You know, that's just where my head is. But I feel great at 65. And I visualize myself at 80 and 85. I might have white hair. by then. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know if I'll have a ponytail or short hair. But I will be someone that still walks a lot. I will be someone that is involved with a lot of younger people, and I will be touching my toes and doing planks and down dog for the rest of my life.
And that's a great thought. I have never seen you in such a good place.
Yeah.
And I have been saying this for the past few years. We have a mutual friend, and the last time I saw you in person, I came home and I said to our friend Jay, I said, she has changed. Something has shifted. Something shifted for her. She is in a different place, and it's such a joy to see, and it continues to be a joy to see while you're helming yet another huge brand. I'm so thrilled for you, and my only regret is that we're not doing this over a tequila on the rock,
but soon though there might soon. Be a Bobby visit soon.
Well, come on, Bobby, get on a plane and we'll have the tequila on the rocks. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much to the inimitable Bobby Brown for putting her best face forward. Please subscribe and follow Beyond the Bathroom wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a rating and a review. I'll see you next time with another guest. Take care.
Insanity Group.